Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredients as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is so simple. Just fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a quick chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. Effecty gave me the opportunity to try their service out, and I have to say, it is just as easy as they say it is. I filled out the questionnaire, and within days, a package arrived at my door filled with everything I needed and detailed instructions. Their website also tells you everything you need to know, and you can always chat with your healthcare provider. It really is that simple and convenient. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game, my listeners can now get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with code ATTWG at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use the code ATTWG to get $50 off your first month of GLP-1 weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. So get started today. Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends that they'll deliver discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code ATTWG. It is wild how different each one of their gummies feels. Their sleepy time gummies knock me out in about 15 minutes flat with no hangovers, no grogginess, and I just wake up feeling amazing. Oh, and the Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your crap mood. What makes these different is how they pair THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not going to just find gummies like this in a dispensary, or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything. Immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, and sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. no pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. Hey everyone, Kona Gallagher here. I just wanted to pop in really quickly before we start this week's episode to say thank you. We have been blown away by the amount of support that we've gotten since we launched, and I wanted to give a few very special shout-outs. One, thank you to everybody who has left us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. That helps us so much. And thank you, Cassie Sweet, for yours. I saw you there. I loved it. There were more, but I didn't recognize your username. So I read those too. And thank you so much. Also, special shout out to Alice Frazier, who was our first monthly supporter. I haven't even set this up really or done anything with it yet, but she went on to anchor.fm where we host our podcast and saw that there is a monthly donation button, and she took it upon herself to go ahead and do it. So thank you so much. I do plan on doing a Patreon or something like that with extra episodes and other fun things down the line if there's interest. So if you have any suggestions for that, please let me know. And that's all I got. So let's get on with this week's episode. On December 15th, 1995, the Markley family had just experienced a tragic loss. John Markley, a 36-year-old father of five, had just lost his twin sister to cancer 2 days previously. Unsurprisingly, he was taking her death quite hard. The viewing was scheduled for that evening, and her funeral was supposed to take place the next day. That's why when the Markley children returned home from school that day to find the house empty, they weren't immediately concerned. Perhaps their parents had to run errands before the viewing. The car was gone, and the children expected their parents to be home soon. But the Markleys weren't back in a few minutes. As it got closer to the time to go to the funeral home, the children went to their aunt's house, who lived nearby. And they ended up going to the viewing with their aunt and uncle, but John and his wife Shelley never appeared. In fact, nearly 25 years have gone by with no trace of John or Shelley Markley. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of John and Shelley Markley. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. John and Shelley Markley were young when they got together. When they got married in 1979, John was 20 and Shelley was just 16.
Was that legal then?
I mean, I assume so. It was the 70s. I don't think they had laws then. but after they got married, they quickly got to work on starting a big family. Their first daughter, Ruthie, was born in 1980, and three sisters followed her, each a year apart: Stacy, Bonnie, and Crystal. So, poor Shelley, four children from the ages of 16 to 20, one right after the other.
Yeah, so she was basically pregnant for 4 years
straight. Like the whole time.
Wow.
I cannot imagine.
That sounds awful.
Yeah, 16. That is, yeah. But, you know.
Not what we were doing at 16.
No, certainly not. And, but it does seem like that's what she wanted because, you know, she loved being a mom. In fact, it wasn't until 4 years after Crystal was born that the Markleys had another child, their last child, which was their only son, Johnny. In fact, the day that John and Shelley went missing was Johnny's 8th birthday.
Ouch.
Mm-hmm. At 36 and a father of five, John made a good living as an independent truck driver, and Shelley, who had recently turned 32, was a stay-at-home mom who everyone says was devoted to her children. She was known around town, and people would see her piling them all in the car to go grocery shopping.
Just a whole horde just
piled, stacked on top of each other, yeah. The Markleys were able to live a financially secure life in the small town of Farmington Township in Trumbull County, Ohio, despite the fact that at the time of their disappearance in 1995, John was on a disability for a back injury. Their house was completely paid off.
Which, that must be nice.
Oh my God, I know, right?
I wish our house could be paid off.
And their freezer was stocked with food for the winter. And John even had some toys, including a prized 1978 red Corvette that he always kept covered in his garage.
Nice.
Yeah.
So he's got a 78 vet. His house is paid off.
Right.
He's 36.
36, five kids.
What are we doing wrong?
Everything. And I think part of it is, like, one of us should have been a long-haul truck driver.
Yeah, I guess.
So
I guess I went down the wrong road.
Yeah, we all did. The morning of Friday, December 15th, 1995, started off as normal as it could have, given the fact that it was little Johnny's birthday and the family was preparing to visit the funeral home for their aunt's viewing that evening. John and Shelley both put Johnny on the school bus and returned home to prepare for everything they had to do that day. Now, the next and last confirmed sighting of the couple was at 10:36 that morning, when a bank teller says she saw the couple pull up in their red and silver 1990s Chevy pickup truck. They wrote a check for $1,000 out to cash, and the teller remembers Shelley signing it on the dashboard. Now, the Markleys had this money in their account because a few weeks prior to this, they had taken out a $1,500 loan to buy new tires for John's semi-truck. After they cashed the check, there was just under $900 left in the account.
Okay, so right off the bat, you know, I'm thinking 35 years old, five kids, just had a traumatic death in the family,
mm-hmm.
stressed out,
mm-hmm.
they're going to the bank, take the money out, run away, start a new life.
Yeah.
But why would you... A, only take out $1,000 knowing that you had more than that in there.
Right.
And why would you leave $900 in the account and not just empty the account and
yeah.
take off?
Well, exactly. And so I think initially the thoughts behind their disappearance was just that
yeah.
they decided to run off and just start
a new life.
Somewhere. Which, you know, what, 5 months into the pandemic, like, I think we can really identify with.
We can all relate to that, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, but you're absolutely right. Like, none of the money part of this makes any sense. Because if you're going to go for it, like, go for it.
Right,
take all of the money out. You know, there's no reason to leave some behind for later or whatever. Like, you're just taking cash. Just take the cash.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, the running away with, and also running away with just $1,000, granted, it's 1995, and they were clearly very good with their money.
But that's still not going to get you very far.
No, one, I mean, you wouldn't think.
Yeah.
So, you know, so if you say, okay, well, maybe that's not what they were doing with the money, you know, they took out this loan to buy tires, so maybe they were just going to buy tires.
But they took out $1,500.
Yeah.
A $1,500 loan for
right.
the tires.
And only took $1,000 out in cash. Now, there could be... So think about it this way. I mean, you know, we were actually just talking about student loans yesterday. And I talked about how, like, when I was a freshman in college, I had student loans and grants and things that left me with extra money that I was able to just use for other
right.
things. So
yeah.
maybe... They took out a $1,500 loan, but the tires truly only would cost $1,000.
Right. But wouldn't you just write the check directly to the vendor, to the tire shop?
Right. Well, yeah, you're right. And that's the other thing. So let's say even with that, if they were only buying $1,000 worth of tires and they just wanted, you know, the extra $500 for whatever, then yeah, like, are they going to some weird cash-only auto tire place? I mean, yeah, why wouldn't you just write a check?
Right, yeah.
Like, I don't, you know, I we never carry cash, and that is very much a now thing. And in 1995, it was much more common to carry large amounts of cash. But if I have anything over $100, like, I get nervous, yeah, you know, exactly. I feel so weird, like I robbed somebody or something. Yeah. And, you know, so the idea of just randomly carrying $1,000 is terrifying to me. But again, I mean, it was stuff like that was much more common then. But I still don't see why you wouldn't just write a check.
To the tire shop.
To the tire shop, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, so it looks like the cash, though, ultimately probably wasn't for the tires either. Because based on what the teller said, the Markleys weren't alone when they came to the bank. The teller told police that John was driving the pickup truck and Shelley was sitting in the middle. On the passenger side was a slender, dark-haired man that the teller couldn't identify or describe. Hmm. Yeah. And so let's, again, I always feel like we need to talk to our younger listeners here and explain.
Don't understand how banks work back right. then.
And to be perfectly honest, like I haven't stepped inside of a bank in probably 5 years. And that was only because I lost my debit card and like needed to get another one or whatever. And so at this point, you got to picture it. They were going through the drive-thru. So that was usually two or three lanes, and the first lane you have the teller window, and so you can probably get a pretty good look at them, but the second and the third lanes are further away, and there's the vacuum tube, which is how you sent your money or checks or deposit slips or whatever to the teller. That was in between, so that was right there obstructing your view. So if you're in the second or third lane, it would be really hard for the teller to see who's in the car.
Right. Even if there wasn't a car immediately in front of the teller, yeah. If you were still
that far
two
away,
two or three lanes out, that's two or three car lengths
yeah.
away from where you are. I mean, it would be difficult to see anybody in the car, let alone the third person deep in the car.
Yeah. And even if you're in that first lane, basically in front of the teller window, it's still awkward. And you're like, there's the teller window, there's the car. Like, it's still, I can understand basically why she wouldn't have been able to really get a good description of this guy if he was all the way on the other side on the end with two people blocking her view of him.
Right.
And also, to her, this is a completely normal transaction. Like, she wouldn't be paying attention to this guy. It doesn't matter to her what he looks like.
Exactly. Nothing stood out about no. the event.
Yeah. I mean, they cashed a check. Like, who cares? When the Markley children returned home from school that afternoon, they naturally assumed their parents would be right back. But they also immediately realized that things weren't exactly right in their house either. Their father's watch, which he always wore, was in the kitchen. Also in the kitchen was Shelley's purse, cigarette case, and cigarettes.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now that's a big deal. I mean, my mother smoked from the time she was 13 till probably still now.
Yeah.
And she never went anywhere without her cigarettes and
exactly.
her cigarette case.
Like, probably not even to the end of the driveway to check the mail.
No.
I mean,
unless
seriously.
She had a lit cigarette in her mouth.
Right. Well, and that's what the Markley kids basically said. Like, that. I think the watch are like, oh, that's weird because he always wears it. But it was like, it was honestly the cigarette case that they're like, what
yeah.
is happening?
That's a big deal.
It is. Yeah. Shelley was a pack-a-day smoker. And so, like I said, the kids immediately thought that that was crazy. But also, next to the cigarettes was a half a cup of coffee. And the coffee maker was still on with the remnants of that morning's pot burning on the bottom.
So it seems as though they left in a hurry.
Exactly. And so, again, when you go back, yeah, when you go back to the, like, we want to start a new life thing, I mean.
Well, that theory's gone.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to leave your watch behind. You're not going to leave the cigarettes behind. You're not going to leave the coffee pot on.
Right.
You know, that's just not what you do. I mean, even if you don't even want to pack, let's say you don't want to pack a bag and you're like, we want nothing of our former life or whatever, you're going to take your cigarettes.
Yeah.
You're going to turn off the coffee pot.
Right.
But as the kids went upstairs, they found even more things out of place. Their father's gun safe, which was always locked, was open. And there was also a smaller safe in the master bathroom that was open as well. And so this has been described in a few different ways based on different things that I've read. Like, they just had a smaller safe. What I think it actually was is a lockbox, basically, because okay. yeah. it was where they kept their documents. which the kids found. So documents, including birth certificates, were just kind of scattered around. In the bedroom, the bed was unmade, and John and Shelley's clothes that they were planning on wearing to the funeral home were laid out on top. While their parents' pickup truck was gone, their father's Corvette was still in the garage, but the tarps that always covered it were missing.
It seems to me somebody might have come into the house, perhaps armed with a gun, forced them to go through their things to see what kind of valuables they had, mm-hmm. Wanted to get into both the lockbox and the safe to see what was in there, perhaps took more guns, I don't know.
Yeah.
Why would you remove the tarps and not want to take that car?
Right. And that is interesting to me, because if the motivation was money,
right,
it seems to me that you could get a lot
more money for a vet than you could by forcing them to go to the bank and take out $1,000.
$1,000, right? Yeah. And even if he had, and it's unclear as to whether or not there were guns missing from the safe. And if so, how many and what type and whatever. And, you know, I mean, I know nothing about guns, but like even selling guns
can get you more than $1,000 very easily. Yeah.
Yeah. But I still feel like the vet would be, you know, would still get you more money typically, unless you have some sort of weird collectible.
Yeah. I mean, obviously a vet would get you more money. My only thought
process guns would be behind, easier to sell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Guns would be easier to sell. A vet might be easier to track. But maybe this was a crime where Slender Man wanted quick money.
Slender Man?
Wasn't he described as a tall Slender Man with dark hair?
Hey everyone, it's me, Kona. You may know me as the host of this show, but I'm actually a licensed realtor by trade. I work in Northern Virginia and can help you buy, sell, or rent. Interest rates are at an all-time low, so it is a fantastic time to buy your first home or your next home. I've even published a booklet that gives you all of the information you need to know about the home buying process to make it as stress-free as possible. You can get your free copy by going to buyersguide.callkona.com. And don't forget to visit me on Facebook and Instagram at Kona Gallagher Realtor. Now back to the show. So like I said at the beginning, after their parents didn't return, the Markley children went to their aunt and uncle's house, who lived nearby. And as day turned into night and the couple missed the service at the funeral home, the family knew something horrible had happened to John and Shelley. So at 12:30 a.m., family members reported the couple missing. I couldn't find a lot of information about the early days of the investigation, though it does seem reasonable that police had to ask themselves if John and Shelley had simply just taken off of their own free will, you know, which we talked about, because, again, it's not common for a couple to just go missing,
right,
unless they go missing because they want to go missing.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, typically when a couple goes missing, they're found later, murdered.
Yeah, if there is foul play involved, typically the bodies are found.
Yeah.
Or they just ran off to start a new life. Shelley's sister, Linda Mason, immediately dismissed this theory of them running off, saying that they were very devoted parents. She told NBC affiliate WFMJ, quote, "John and Shelley loved their children very much and were very protective. They would never, never go away and leave them unattended," end quote. And plus, the home looked like they either left against their will or at least left in a big hurry. If the Markleys were going to abandon their children and start a new life, you would think that they'd at least grab the cigarettes and turn off the coffee pot, like we said.
Again,
I mean,
if you're a pack-a-day smoker, you don't leave the cigarettes there.
And then you also don't take only half of what you have in your bank account.
Right.
And keep in mind, this was 1995, so it took longer for authorities to gain access to certain records. So it wasn't until the next week that police were able to look at the Markley's bank activity and find out about that $1,000 check that they had written and interview the bank teller who told them about the man in the truck. So, you know, we're talking about a week later, which is a huge amount of time, but in their defense,
it's that might have been something beyond their control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even with this information and a possible suspect, the investigation into the Markley's disappearance didn't seem to really get a lot of traction. From what I've been able to find, it doesn't look like any suspects were identified, nor was anyone brought in for questioning. At this point, all the police know is that John and Shelley are gone, and at one point, they were with an unidentified third man. But shortly after their disappearance, a big clue emerges that does not bode well for the missing Ohio couple. The Markley's red Chevy pickup truck was found locked and abandoned in the parking lot of the former Stambaugh's hardware store on Elm Road in Bristolville, about 10 miles from the Markley's home. According to an article in the Tribune Chronicle from 2015, family members said that the truck was dirty and looked like it had been driven off-road, which is not something the Markley's were known to do. And again, I mean, I guess I get that the truck is like their normal everyday car, but this is still a guy who kept a car in a garage also covered by tarps. So right. He's a car guy. Like, he's not going to have a dirty, muddy car. So, right.
I mean, and especially if presumably that was the car that they were going to be taking to the viewing.
Yeah.
It's definitely not going
to. Right. He's not going to roll up to his twin sister's viewing. Yeah. Right. You're looking like that. You're right.
So at this point, did you find anything out? Did the police look inside the car? I'm assuming that there's no sign of foul play inside the car.
Well, yeah, so police, of course, did search the truck and didn't find the keys or the checkbook that the bank teller saw. However, the couple's cell phone was still sitting on the console, and in the bed of the truck were the two tarps that John used to cover his Corvette.
Again, very strange.
Very strange.
Why take the tarps off if you don't take the car?
Well, my first thought was because you were planning on killing these people and you wanted to wrap up their bodies.
Oh, yeah.
But...
Well, you're darker minded than I am.
Well, but now we have the truck. We don't have John and Shelley, and we still have the tarps.
Right.
So I can't explain the tarps at this point.
Yeah.
And the tarps are also held down by a tire for a semi truck, which is interesting because the whole tire thing kind of came up earlier, but it doesn't say if this was a new tire or just an old tire that John had just kind of had around.
If you're just going to weight the tarps down so they don't fly out of the back of the truck, a semi tire.
Yeah.
Seems a little really bit like large.
Overkill.
Yeah. I mean,
well, unless the tire was already in the bed of the truck for some reason.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, if it was already there, then whatever, sure.
Yeah.
But nobody that the police interviewed could say how long the truck had been sitting in the parking lot either. So this is, you know, at least a week after their disappearance, but they don't know. Police don't know if the truck has been sitting there the entire week or if it just got there the day before or what.
And so they have no video surveillance footage for
the
hardware store. Probably not the bank either. I'm assuming that they probably looked at that.
Yeah, no, nothing. If police were still holding on to an inkling of hope that the Markley's had just walked away, the abandoned truck pretty much put the nail in that coffin. The discovery prompted a search of hundreds of acres around the Markley home. An air search was also conducted, and divers checked surrounding lakes and waterways, including Nelson Ledge's quarry, Mosquito Lake, and Lake Milton, but no trace of John and Shelley were found.
Yeah, now on our last episode, we talked about it being odd that they would jump
straight to a body search.
Recovery instead of searching for a missing person, but here... That makes sense. I mean, you have a truck that obviously looks like it had been driven off road, you know, two missing adults, not a single female. I mean, yeah, all the clues are pointing to not good news for the Markley's.
Exactly. Just when it seems that all hope is lost in this case, a suspect does emerge. In 1996, the Markley family starts receiving phone calls from a man claiming to have kidnapped John and Shelley.
He calls several times and demands money in exchange for information about the couple's whereabouts, eventually demanding a $10,000 ransom.
You said in 1996. Yeah, so, when in 96?
So early, so like January. So they went they disappeared in mid-December. So we're just talking, you know, less than a month after they disappeared. Police set up a sting at a gas station where the money drop was supposed to be made. Except instead of a duffel bag full of cash, the alleged kidnapper is met with a duffel bag full of rags. Police arrested 45-year-old Stephen Durst, who was one of John's co-workers. Now, at this point, police are thrilled that there's just some movement on the case.
Yeah, absolutely.
And family members must have felt so grateful that they might finally find out what happened to John and Shelley. Except when police interview Durst, they come to the conclusion that he didn't have anything to do with their disappearance. As far as they're concerned, he's just an opportunist who was trying to make money off of a tragedy. And for his part, Durst denied making the calls, but he was convicted of extortion and sentenced to 4 to 10 years in prison.
Wow.
Yeah. I think cops are a little pissed at this situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's kind of it for this case for the next several years. John and Shelley were declared legally dead in 1999, and in 2000, their children were interviewed by the Morning Journal for an article on the five-year anniversary of their parents' disappearance. The three oldest girls, Ruthie, Stacy, and Bonnie, moved back into their childhood home along with Ruthie's husband, Travis Orr.
I don't think I could do that.
I couldn't either.
No.
I mean, yeah. They, I mean, you know, they
I get,
went. And,
I get that the house is. Paid off,
right?
And but,
yeah,
that would be
to
tough.
Revisit it.
Yeah,
you know, yes, 5 years has gone by, but still,
it's still their childhood home, all the memories of their parents being there.
Yeah,
I mean, that's got to bring up a lot.
Yeah, the younger sister, Crystal, who was 17 at the time, still lived with her aunt and uncle. And their little brother, Johnny, who was 13 in 2000, lived with his paternal grandmother. And as you can imagine, the kids had a rough go of it after their parents disappeared. Quote, "I know I'm still a kid, but I see things differently," end quote. Stacy, who is 19, told the Tribune Chronicle, "We were made to grow up so fast." As the oldest child, Ruthie says that adults put a lot of pressure on her to stay strong for her younger siblings. At the time of this interview, she was 20 years old and pregnant with her first child. She said that this led to her never really being able to deal with her parents' disappearance, saying, quote, "I told myself, you've got to turn cold. That's how I'll deal with it," end quote. I mean, this poor girl, like, she was 15 years old. Yeah, and the adult said, "Hey, it's you. You're in charge now. You have to be strong." And she was grieving just as much as they were.
Yeah, that's tough. That's a tough psychological thing to take in. And then, you know, the ramification of having to take care of her younger siblings, and I mean, that's really tough.
Beyond anything else, the Markley children just wanted answers. Quote, "Even if we find out they're dead, it'll be over," Ruthie said. Unfortunately, those answers wouldn't come. In fact, it would be another 15 years before there was any more movement in the case. In 2015, on the 20th anniversary of the unsolved crime, police received new leads. Trumbull County Sheriff Tom Altier was in his first term as sheriff in 1995 when the Markleys went missing. Quote, "This has been on my mind for 20 years, this case," Altier told WFMJ. The sheriff didn't go into details, but said that they had been investigating new information in the cold case. He went on to say, quote, "As a matter of fact, a couple of weeks ago, we got some more leads on this, and it's funny because now it's the 20-year anniversary. We have interviewed three people last week, and we're looking for three more people to interview," end quote. Information from these interviews was never released to the public, though, and the case remained stalled. But just this year, nearly 25 years after John and Shelley disappeared, there was possibly more news. On April 9th, 2020, a 71-year-old man named Milton Kurtzman was arrested for shooting his roommate, 64-year-old Alan Beiler. According to sworn documents, Kurtzman accused Beiler of stealing firearms from him. Kurtzman admitted to firing 4 shots at Beiler, who was treated for gunshot wounds to the stomach. The following Tuesday, police returned to Kurtzman's property in Bristol Township to search for evidence unrelated to the shooting. Trumbull County Sheriff Paul Monroe told WKBN, quote, "The crime scene, we found out, extended beyond the house. There may be additional crimes that occurred on this property and evidence of such which we're trying to recover at this time," end quote.
Well, that doesn't sound good if this ties into our case.
Yeah. Sheriff Monroe wouldn't tell reporters what they were looking for, but he did say, quote, "This is something that dates back historically 20 years that we're looking at," end quote. Dozens of law enforcement officers, including Trumbull County Sheriff's deputies, along with BCI and FBI agents, returned the next day to continue the search on the 50-acre property. Chief Deputy Joe Dragovich told WKBN that more investigators plan on returning, but he didn't say what they expected to find there. Because law enforcement is so tight-lipped about what led them to Kurtzman's property or whether it even has anything to do with the Marquis disappearance, we don't have any definitive answers. What I do find interesting is that Kurtzman shot Beiler over an argument about firearms. If you recall, John Markley's gun safe, which was always locked, was found open the day he went missing. Could their disappearance have been related to guns? Maybe John, who wasn't working at the time and needed to take out a loan to get new tires for his semi-truck, wanted to sell some firearms to make more money. I mean, you've done that.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely have.
Yeah. Could Kurtzman have come over to the Markley home that day to buy guns? Maybe things went wrong and he took the Markleys hostage, forced them to withdraw cash, and murdered and buried them on his property. Kurtzman has already shown that he's willing to shoot somebody over arguments about guns.
Right.
At 71, when most people have calmed down.
Right, so 20, 25 years previous to that.
Yeah, like if he's still a hothead at 71, I mean, imagine what he would have been 25 years previously.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, this is all just speculation. If we ever do find out if Kurtzman had anything to do with John and Shelley's disappearance, the information won't come from him. On April 10th, just one day after being taken into custody for the shooting, Milton Kurtzman was found dead in his cell.
Suicide?
No, actually, the coroner later found that he died of natural causes.
Oh, come on. Really?
I know. This December will be the 25th anniversary of John and Shelley Markley's disappearance, and their 5 children, now adults, still don't have answers. To me, this case seems solvable. Whether or not it was Kurtzman, someone was in that pickup truck with the Markleys on December 15th, 1995, and someone out there knows who it was.
So, did the police, I'm assuming that they questioned Kurtzman's roommate? Who was shot?
Yeah, but there isn't.
They don't disclose anything.
Police were just so tight-lipped about anything about that case that may have been connected to the Markley case. Like, they really were not giving any information.
Okay.
But yeah, there was somebody in that truck, and 25 years later, I can't imagine that person has just been completely tight-lipped about it.
He slipped up somewhere. He definitely had to have said something.
Something to somebody. Exactly.
Whether it was Kurtzman and maybe saying something to his roommate.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he didn't have a roommate at the time, but it's also strange to me that, you know, he could, even if he had a firearm, that he could potentially kill both of them without some sort of struggle or
right.
Without somebody seeing or hearing something. Now, of course, I don't know where. You said Kurtzman had 50 acres of property, so, you know, maybe he doesn't have neighbors that live close to him, but you got to think that somebody would have seen something.
Yeah.
You know, somebody would have seen him driving an unusual car. You know, how did he get to
how did he get to that
house?
Well, exactly. How did he get to the Markley's house? And how...
If he dropped off the truck, where did he go after that?
Right.
So somebody else had to have been driving a vehicle...
They didn't have Ubers in 1995.
Right. And I can't imagine there were a whole lot of taxis
right.
out there.
Yeah. I mean, because this is a fairly rural area. So, no, those are good questions. Like, all of this to me points at another person who is driving. And what's that saying? Like, two people can keep a secret if one of them's dead or something like that.
Yeah, sure.
But
I don't know what you're talking about. You're clearly, again, you're way darker. You have a way darker mind than I do.
No, but I just, if we're right and there was more than one person involved in John and Shelley's disappearance, like, it's, you know, once more and more people know about this, it's harder to keep it secret. So if it's one person who's involved, you know, maybe he only tells one person, or maybe he tells no people. But then if there are two people involved, what if they each tell one person? And then, you know, it just grows exponentially from there.
Right.
And so somebody out there knows what happened, and we just need somebody who's willing to talk, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you have to think about their kids.
Yeah.
This is, the oldest one was 15 when this happened, right?
And the youngest one, it was his birthday.
His 8th birthday.
Yeah.
And so he has to live with that.
Yeah.
The not knowing of what happened to his parents, right, from the time he was 8 years old till, yeah, now.
And keep in mind, too, I mean, you know, this family had just lost their aunt, their father's twin sister.
Right.
So it's tragedy on top of tragedy.
Yeah.
For these poor kids. Somebody's out there. Somebody knows something. And that person just may have the key to cracking this case wide open. John and Shelley Markley have been missing since December 15th, 1995. John would be 61 today, and Shelley would be 56. If you or anyone you know has information on what happened to them, please contact the Trumbull County Sheriff's Department at 330-675-2540. You can see all of the sources for this episode in our show notes and on our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook, and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us.
We'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.